accidents are caused by driver behavior. So this is the action that you and I take behind the wheel of the car. So at the time of driving, what decisions are you making and what actions are you taking? And that's really what effect causes accidents. So traditionally, insurance companies rely a lot on rating factors as a proxy to risk factors. And they obviously analyze data and claims experiences. And in the end, you get a price based on averages. So we all know that the average male drives worse than the average female. I hope you know that, if you don't. But what about that poor one guy who actually drives better? I'm sure there are a couple. And what about those females that drive worse? We know there are lots of those. So is it fair that they pay the same premium as everybody else? And the answer is obviously no. And to reduce the cross-subsidization, to get the competitive edge, to price risk appropriately, insurers are adopting telematics. So today we're covering two topics. The one is from EY, and they're talking about telematics and how it's disrupting the motor insurance business in South Africa. And then after that, Annette's going to be speaking on the use of cognitive mapping in user-based insurance. Each topic's going to get 20 minutes, and then after that we'll open the floor for another 10 minutes or so for questions to the panel as a whole. So keep your questions till then. So let me just introduce the first paper. Sumeri and Covey are responsible for short-term insurance within the Africa Actuarial Services practice at EY. They work across the industry in various capacities, doing everything from helping companies to formulate strategy to more traditional actuarial work like pricing, reserving, and capital modeling. Covey, now an associate director at EY, also worked at Quindium before joining EY. Sumeri, a director in the practice prior to working at EY, worked at Swiss Re and co-founded Quindium Consulting. She was also involved in developing the Hollard pay-as-you-drive offering, which was the first usage-based insurance product in South Africa that used telematics. Covey and Sumeri have both taken a personal interest in telematics, given its potential impact on the motor industry in South Africa, the motor insurance industry. They are part of EY's Global Telematics Working Group, which coordinates the firm's work in this space. The firm is currently active in telematics in 20 countries, including USA, UK, Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, China, and Italy. As part of this working group, they've also conducted a local industry survey over the past 3 months, focusing on telematics in personal lines motor insurance, where they interviewed 13 local insurers and one telematics provider, and have informally spoken to most people looking at this space in South Africa. The survey asked industry for its view on many aspects of telematics, including where the market is likely to go. So in today's talk, they share a part of the survey results and some further insights onto the topic. So I'd like to call forward Sumeri and Covey. Thanks.
Nice to be here today. I think both Covey and I are very excited to talk to you today. And we thought it would be appropriate to start this session by paraphrasing something that Steve Jobs actually said. He said that once in a while, a product comes along that totally revolutionizes everything. It reinvents the way that we do things completely and occasionally reshapes the industry around it. Now, all of us probably know that he was talking about the iPhone, right? Now, there's lots of other examples that's exactly like this. Uber, that has totally reshaped the taxi industry. If I think about it, people like me, I would never have used a taxi before. Firstly, I don't like haggling about the price. And to be quite honest, I used to feel quite unsafe. Now, I travel down to Cape Town. I don't even hire a vehicle. I just Uber. So I think in hindsight, and it feels as though it's so easy to identify these things. long before they start. But I think the reality of it is, a lot of times, these things are not that easy to identify. For example, when direct insurers started in this industry, before they start disrupting, it's not easy to see that that's what they're going to do. And I think most of us in this room, when the direct insurers launched, I don't think we would have predicted how big or how profitable they would be today. Now, if you look on the screen here, you'll see some quotes from both local people as well as international people, and it's fairly obvious that they feel that telematics is going to disrupt the insurance industry, and that it is going to change the way that insurers actually engage with their customers, but maybe even more importantly, it will change the way how customers think about insurance and how they make their choices around insurance. Some of them go even further to say that it will allow new entrants into a market that has previously been very difficult to break into and could potentially unseat some of our long-established players if they don't follow suit.
It's precisely because of this threat that we've taken an interest in the question, how disruptive could telematics be for the South African insurance industry and for personal lines motor in particular? We obviously have international markets and their developments as a reference point, but to fully explore this question, we've spent the past couple of months running a local survey which looked at some of the key questions around telematics and allowed us to collect both qualitative and quantitative data in the local context.
I think it's fair to say that there's no consensus as to where this is going. And it's also fairly obvious, if you look at the responses of the local players, that how big telematics is going to be is not obvious to them either. You have some of them that are busy launching pilots, some of them are close to actually launching UBI or telematics products, while there's others that are quite cynical still and are not doing much, sitting on the sidelines and taking a lot more of a wait-and-see approach. Now, we're going to take the next 15 minutes to take you through what we have seen both locally and abroad, sharing some of the conversations that we had, and hopefully trying to cut a little bit through some of the hype so that you, each one of you, can start forming a view of where this is likely to go.
We'll start by looking at some of the key benefits as to why an insurer would actually launch a telematics product. And I think both locally and internationally, everyone seems to agree that more accurate rating is one of the key benefits of these products. This might be because despite the sophistication of modern motor rating, many of the rating factors that insurers currently use are still proxies for the true underlying risk and exposure. And insurers typically still have a very fuzzy view of what the true risk that they're taking on is. Especially at inception.
Yeah, and I think despite all the advances that we've made in personal lines motor rating over the last 15 years, it still takes insurers a couple of years to get to the true risk rate that they have to charge for the individual insured. Now, the view is that telematics will allow us to actually speed up that process, that we can get from point A to point B a lot quicker within a matter of months. And why is that? It's because of the large amount of information that we will be collecting very quickly. And that information will also be on non-claimants. And I think that's one of the key things.
There's also a controversial view that, in fact, telematics is still in an early adopter phase. And it's still benefiting from quite a large self-selection effect. As more entrants enter the market and competition increases, rating sophistication may need to increase along with it, especially in being able to differentiate between different shades of good and average drivers, and not just identify the really poor drivers as current rating models do. And so as things develop, what's also quite likely is that the benefit of rating using telematics may diminish over time. For example, in the UK market, when direct insurers first entered the market, there was quite a large advantage to being able to cherry pick using GLMs the good risks out of the pool. But now that a lot of the competition has caught up, that benefit is much, much less, though it's still a requirement in order to play in that market.
Now, the flip side to that is of rating is, of course, the ability to influence the way that people drive. And in the international markets, when we had those discussions, that was one of the key benefits that was identified of launching a telematics product. Interestingly enough, in the local market, people weren't as bullish about this, although they still did identify it as a potential benefit of telematics.
This may be because it's actually quite hard to influence customers' behavior. In fact, in a recent telematics conference earlier this year, Discovery Insurer actually mentioned that the improvements in driving behavior that they saw off the back of their driving game were temporary. And once the game ended, a lot of people actually reverted back to their previous driving behavior. This might be because people lose interest. So you either have to keep them engaged, which is quite hard, and social media techniques might be useful there, or you have to engage with them when they misbehave, for example, by pushing notifications to them on a harsh acceleration event. But like one of the CEOs in the market of a telematics insurer mentioned, that takes all the fun out of driving.
So I think the question of whether insurers will be able to influence driving on a sustainable basis will remain open, even for the players who have already launched. They're not clear. So there was general consensus that if you are building a telematics strategy, basing that strategy on rating and your ability to improve driver behavior alone wouldn't really make sense. Now, in the South African market, where the size of the pie for motor insurance is not growing, margins are under constant pressure for most of the players anyway, it's probably then not so surprising that some of our participants identified improvements in retention and through that improving your margin and also growing your book as one of the things that they see telematics could bring to the table.
Interestingly, some of the international players are not as bullish about retention as a key benefit, and that might be because they've been at it for a lot longer and have learnt a few things, and their markets might be a little bit more mature as well. I think the reason that many people saw these products as being able to create stickiness is because, firstly, the product itself is quite unique, and generally the first adopters or first movers, there aren't similar products in the market. But also it allows the customer to build up a history with the insurer over time, prove that they're in fact a good driver, and earn lower premiums as a result of that. And then it actually becomes quite difficult to find similarly priced insurance or similarly cheap insurance elsewhere in the market. But in fact, when you unpack that a little bit more, what we see internationally is in fact the telematics data and the scores themselves are a lot more transferable than once was first thought. You've got companies like Confused.com in the UK, an aggregator, who already allow customers to compare insurance products, already taking into account their driving behavior. Obviously, then as more entrants have entered those markets, what we've seen also is the product uniqueness diminishes over time and the products because there are substitute products that are available. And it's easy enough for those competitors or new entrants to offer a discount based on another company's score. In fact, we've already seen an example of this in the local market where some insurers are in fact offering sign-on discounts based on a good Discovery Insure score.
Okay, but before we can start worrying about keeping these guys, we have to get them, right, in the first place. And I think as insurance professionals, it's quite easy for us to be seduced by the sexiness and the newness of telematics. It is important to understand, though, that we are asking customers that have been used to operate in a commoditized market to actually deal with a very complex product. And if we take a step away and out of being out of the insurance industry, Most customers have no interest in insurance whatsoever. It's a grudge purchase. And you will ask, will they get interested enough to actually engage with this complex product? Because how do things work at the moment? You phone your broker or you phone the call center, you give a little bit of information, and they give you a number of premiums, right? And you just pick the lowest one. Not once in this conversation do you talk about the benefits or how the product works or anything like that. 2 days later, you get a mail in your inbox and there's your policy wording and you never engage with it. Right? What are we asking them to do now? We're asking them to engage with a product where the premium could vary based on how you drive, where you drive, how much you drive. They have to download an app that they have to engage with. They have to install some device, whether it's a beacon or a deep install. And I can talk from experience that when we launched Pay-as-you-drive, we totally underestimated, despite using interest groups, one, how difficult it would be for the call center to explain to people exactly how this product actually worked, and secondly, what people's reaction would be with a premium that varies month on month, right? Next month, you might pay double what you're paying now. Like one of my friends said, this whole idea makes no sense to him because the reason he purchases insurance is because it allows him to budget for his insurance losses every month.
So coming up with an offering that is actually easy to understand, but still compelling enough to hook the customers, given the complexities of these products, is actually still quite a key challenge. And we don't think anyone has really cracked it yet. In fact, even if you look towards some of the international markets, what we see is insurers hooking the customers with simple marketing messages around lower premiums and saving money, really. But then needing to go on further, perhaps on the website or when the customer calls in to actually explain the product in a bit more detail, which is a lot more complicated.
So, of course, these complex products come with complex operations as well. And one of the consistent messages that we got coming through in talking to industry was, and from those people who've actually launched, was that they underestimated the operational complexity when they originally started with this.
From processing the data, which can be as much as 5 gigabytes per customer per year, to requiring large teams to handle complaints around malfunctioning technology or damage to vehicles from botched installations, all of these things make running these products a lot more complicated than a normal motor insurance products. And for the more established insurers in the market, integrating what is really cutting-edge technology with creaking legacy systems is an additional challenge. Of course, with the complexity comes cost. And in the past, a lot of these devices, especially the ones with advanced sensors like gyroscopes and accelerometers, were prohibitively expensive. But what we've seen in the last couple of years is the cost plummet. And in fact, these days, some of those devices are as cheap as tens of rands per month. And furthermore, a number of insurers have actually moved to using smartphones, which sometimes is even a cheaper solution. Of course, there are also the setup costs of these products and all of the development that needs to be done and the system integration. But all of that really depends on the environment in which you are implementing the product, and it tends to vary largely from insurer to insurer.
So I think by this stage, all of you guys think this is sounding quite negative, right? Why the hell are we even looking at it? But there is definite consensus. If you implement telematics in the correct way, that it can provide you with significant cost savings in every element of your value chain. We've seen some of it being used in the local industry already. Maybe a bit controversially, where one of the players that have launched a telematics product actually uses the information when the claimant phones in to check whether they've been speeding at the time that they actually had the accident. And if they have, they will have no cover.
So it's not surprising then that we see that using the telematics information to make your operations more efficient and to save costs, particularly in the element of sort of reducing fraud, was ranked quite highly among the local insurance industry. But of course you have to be quite careful because there are things like the regulations and the POPI Act, and customers themselves tend to be quite sensitive around privacy issues.
Privacy concerns is definitely one of the biggest things that has been affecting UBI adoption rates in places like the States and in Europe. Interestingly enough, in the local market, people seem to feel less worried about privacy concerns. And one of the main reasons they cited was that most of us already have tracking devices in our vehicles, given levels of crime we experience here.
Not often an issue in insurance is also the issue of intellectual property. In fact, what we've seen in the local market is that Discovery Insurers, in fact, patented a number of aspects around telematics in South Africa. They basically followed in the footsteps of Progressive in the USA. It's not clear as to exactly how much of an impediment this could be, though we have seen a couple of insurers in the local market, in fact, delay the progress of their telematics programs to basically investigate the legal risk around these patents. Progressive in the USA did take quite an aggressive stance over the last 20 years, though.
I think it's interesting that I think we should try and pull everything together, and it'll be interesting to see where people think this will actually go. So over the last 5 to 7 years, as we said, we've seen a couple of people launch telematics products. We've spoken about Pay-as-you-drive that Hollard launched, but there's also guys like Oakhurst, MUA, and of course most notably Discovery that has launched. And although some of them have had some success, I think it is probably fair to say that their share of that private motor pie has not been significant enough to start off with to actually affect the UBI adoption rate.
So when we asked the market where they thought this was all going, as you can see, we got quite a range of responses. But what was clear is that there seemed to be two camps. And the first camp seemed to be a little bit more conservative, basically seeing telematics really as a niche product, perhaps looking at certain market segments, but ultimately never reaching more than about a 20% adoption rate, even over sort of a time horizon of 15 years. The other camp seemed to be a lot more bullish, though there were a few less of them. They really saw telematics going mainstream, and they're the ones in red over there. The first camp are the ones in grey. And the second camp basically saw telematics get to maybe an adoption rate of around about 70% over 15 years. What was interesting for us, though, was that the companies who have actually launched telematics products in the market tended to fall into the first camp, while some of the telematics providers themselves that we spoke to tended to fall into the second.
So you can also see from this graph that most of the guys, irrespective of where they think it's going to end up with, predicted fairly flat growth or almost no growth in the next 3 years. Now, when you look at disruptors normally tend to hockey stick in their adoption rates. Now, a potential way that this could happen in the South African market is if we got one of the big players to actually launch a telematics product, and you get then the rest of the market following suit in a defensive action because they don't want to be selected against. Now, 15 years is a long time, and as you guys saw right at the beginning, there's a lot of things changing in this world around us, right, that could totally affect this. For example, I mean, driverless cars could make motor insurance in the way that it exists at the moment, totally obsolete.
But bringing it back to the issue today, I mean, what's clear is that there's quite a range of views as to, you know, where this is going to go. And in fact, taking a step back, you know, when you contrast some of the views that we've seen in the industry and some of the things that we've highlighted going on in international markets and around the world, with some of the quotes that we started this presentation with around the potential disruptive effect of telematics. I mean, there is quite a divide there. And it begs the question, you know, why are there this range of views, and you know, where is all this going? And the answer might have something to do with the fact that telematics as a value proposition tends to vary from insurer to insurer or person to person. And it really depends on your market position and the particular challenges that you have. There's also, of course, the element of the dark horse, which we mentioned in the beginning, which is really the new entrants. I mean, they weren't part of our survey. They don't have the legacy systems or, you know, complex distribution networks to sort of deal with. Their entrance is a real threat to the industry and the adoption rate. But looking, and you, of course, no doubt have your own view as to where this is all going to go. And it's going to be very interesting to see who turns out to be correct. We don't obviously have a crystal ball, but we'll leave you with this parting thought, and it's something that we said in the beginning, and that's if telematics is truly going to be disruptive in the South African motor industry, regardless of the adoption rate, it's going to change fundamentally the way that consumers engage with their insurance, and it will change completely the way insurers have to do business, and that's going to be an interesting future for us all.
So, both of Kavi and I really enjoyed being here. Like I said, nice to see everyone. And I just really wanted to say thank you for giving us some of your time. You'll see on the slide there, that just gives a little bit more detailed information on two of the questions that we asked in the survey. As Philippa said, we'll stand over questions for the end. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, EY. I'm so being punished for something that I've done in my previous life, because sitting here as a marketing actuary of one of the largest telematics providers in the market, insurance market, I'm struggling not to be able to say anything. But I learned a lot about ethics yesterday, so I will just do my job. Okay. So the next speaker is Annette Potgieter. I'm just going to introduce her. She's got actually three co-paper writers. Daniel Stone's in Australia, so he's not here. Daniel Malachi's in the front, and the CV reads like this. Annette is the technical director of Cognitive Systems. She manages the research and development team that develops systems to observe, learn from, and act upon behavioral dynamics in complex systems in big data environments as it happens. Their team develops in-stream cognitive computing, empowering systems to adapt in real time to complex big data environments such as market streams and complex event streams in the emerging Internet of Things. Annette has a PhD in computer science, specializing in artificial intelligence, bio-inspired computing, and complexity theory. Mining connective intelligence, these are cause-effect patterns that are not found in history, but rather in how the parts interact among themselves and their environment. Examples are rare and extreme risks in stock market, risk anomalies in insurance, and behavior anomalies in sensor streams from smart sensor networks. And just quickly to introduce Daniel as well, who's sitting in the front row here. Daniel is a director and business development manager of Cognitive Systems. His main focus is to build the business of delivering unrivaled complex systems in big data environments. Their systems are characterized by emergent global behaviors that are not easily predicted from the knowledge only of individual behaviors, for example, price fluctuations in markets, climate change, and the human immune system. Drawing from his background of a BSc in immunology, he applies his knowledge of the ability of immune systems to distinguish self from other to develop cognitive systems business frameworks around complex systems that mitigate risk by providing actionable insights in anomalies to business leaders. So that's quite a mouthful, and you better concentrate during this part. Okay, so Annette, if you can come and talk about the use of cognitive mapping in user-based insurance. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Our technology is disruptive. It's a new kind of technology that is totally distributed, and basically, I'm going to discuss with you how the whole Internet of Things Telematics is currently the first real industry-proven most major component of the Internet of Things. But the Internet of Things is here. It's with us. There's the connected car. We're moving into farms. Everything is connected. We've got smart buildings. We've got everything being connected, everything talking to each other. It is here. It's not a pipe dream. It's here. So we are basically developing software that can in real time harness the insights in these streams to give insights and context to the user. So in insurance, the new insurer must be a digital insurer to basically adapt to the market drivers. So what we have here is the traditional way it was done, but then all this technology that is now its takeoff is faster than we could think. It's not in future. It's actually happening as we speak, and it's going to really affect insurers and to basically start taking into account the Internet of Things is a very important step in mitigating risk in very complex environments. So what the Internet of Things bring to the insurer is to bring context of the environment to whatever is happening in the environment. So Internet of Things are low-cost devices that will enable things to communicate with each other. Telematics is already, the cars are already talking to each other. In some of our telematics partners, the cars are even talking to each other. Some cars that have RFID devices and some others have GPS devices. So what will actually be added with the Internet of Things is context. Who is the person? What is the profile of the person? How did something happen? When? Where? What? So if you basically look at how we need to harvest this information is, I just want to, a little. So basically, what we have there is the interconnected things. It needs to be intelligently. The streams have to go into and harvest it and be presented back to produce actionable insights to the insurer. So where do we fit in? We have developed the engine that can basically do that part of the function to drive the insurance, to give insights, actionable and perishable insights to the insurance industry. So I don't want to go too much into detail, but I want to give you just two slides overview of the artificial mind engine. And what is it? It is basically an integrated suite of agent-based components. Now, this is disruptive. It's distributed technology where an agent is a software component that basically monitors individual entities in cars, following the behavior of individuals in the Internet of Things. So it's in a state-of-the-art streaming cognition engine. So it empowers the things in the Internet of Things, and it makes the environments and objects able to behave as individual entities and to take intelligent decisions on behalf of the user. So this is a mouthful. I will take you in the next slides through some examples of how we use this technology in our application. I'm going to start with cognitive mapping because this really, in the current insurance models, having location awareness of things that happen and risk is very important. So cognitive mapping is based on the whole thing that a cognitive map, it actually It consists of the whole mental activity. The previous speakers did say that people can't change their behavior. And that is really true. You know, you set up a cognitive map of how you move in your environment, and it starts getting entrenched in the way you do things. You go to school, take your kids to school. Doesn't matter if it's the optimal way to drive there, it's the way you drive. I mean, so you've got a very distinct behavior that profiles what you do and how you interact with the environment. So what has been neglected until now in risk models is really the impact of the environment on how risk actually happens. And in what I'm going to concentrate a bit on is the whole bringing in location into risk models. So cognitive mapping has, in architecture, the way it's designed, the way people design buildings, they take into account how people interact with the environment. So it's been encoded in architecture, urban design, as paths, nodes, edges. Now, how do people interact with amenities? And in order to optimal design cities. And with the Internet of Things moving into smart cities, technology is coming together with architecture, and there is a lot of value to be taken out of the way that the cities has been built and actually integrating it into the technology and telematics. So let's just start with a cognitive map. So what we do in our technology is we maintain cognitive maps in from devices that have are location aware. So what is a cognitive map then? It captures where. So it's the landmarks, routes, nodes, edges, and zones. When did something happen? So to bring a temporal aspect into your models. How? I mean, how did it happen? So we've got location aware sensor readings. I mean, is someone always driving fast? You know, he's always driving over a certain place. What is his behavior? What is his behavior with respect to his sensors that read his speed, his acceleration? All those things. So the location where sensor reading, and then integrating it into cause-effect models so that you can start reasoning about how someone's behavior is normally, and bringing in the location where it is so that you can but learn over time, adapt to changes in his behavior. Just for example, if a car is stolen, the profile, the cognitive map changes totally. Suddenly somebody is just speeding out of the way it normally does. His location totally changes. He just, his whole profile of what he does, how he does it, is just totally different. So how we built our graphical cognitive maps is basically, I'm putting the little... those are just little representations of areas and suburbs. So it is basically cause-effect patterns of how people, sources, destinations, what they do, on ways that they travel, what the risks are on the ways from feedback, adaptive feedback, from risks that really occurred. So we mine probabilistic relationships from using spatial behavior networks where our nodes are points of interest. We've got ways and waypoints, and our edges are trips, so source destination maps with risks. And we do in-stream cognition, the as, where, when, and how, to which we then continuously monitor for anomalies, so that there's early warning of anomalous behavior, so that you can feedback. And the most important aspect is the adaptive feedback, because if there was really a risk event that happened, it has to be fed back, so that you can learn what was the context that led to this anomalous behavior. So next time that you start seeing the same indicators that was now anomalous, you can know what is the probability of a similar event happening again. So it's machine learning, artificial intelligence, learning over time of how things happen, but bringing in the geospatial mapping. Cognitive maps are very individual. It's how people interact with their surroundings. It is totally different for each person. I touched on it before, but everyone has got his own cognitive map. And if you can actually automatically understand somebody's cognitive map, you get actionable insights into anomalous behaviors with respect to these maps that they maintain of how they interact with the environment. And what we're then building are maps of individual behaviors so that we can identify anomalies early. But now, the smart cities have come along. there's already a smart city built that they're building here in Costa Waterfall Park. It's starting to happen. We are working with large consulting firms that is upgrading the urban cities to actually use technology to make our urban cities smarter. The smart metering systems, the smart cities are here sooner than what you will think. And already there are being measures put in place to monitor things in the environment. Smart bridges that people put monitors on. Now, a bridge is a risk. It can collapse on cars. by putting actually into the things in the environment, also some smart sensor networks, you can add all those to your risk profiles. So yeah, I've just shown a few things in the smart cities that will add to risk. It's the smart surveillance cameras, basically, and the smart infrastructure, smart transportation. All these things are happening, and if you can start harnessing it in your risk models, it will really give you a good competitive advantage. So, why I'm bringing in the environment? The environment really determines behavior. There are crime attractors in the environment. There's places that people rather like to go and sit. I'm not criminals. That they prefer to go and to conduct their crimes. And these activities change. It doesn't help to say there is a crime hotspot. You put up a poll, crime hotspot. will they go and sit right next to the hotspot and do their crime next time? It changes on an ongoing behavior, the behavior, but it changes its pattern. So I'm showing the little red stars as attractors in the path that people usually travel that are causing risk in the way, on their way to work, on their way to wherever they go, they are passing through risky areas. And by continuously monitoring those, you can basically build it into your risk profiles, which can then be adaptive to adapt your premiums. So, as I said, we do a lot of chaos theory. So, what I'm saying is the attractors are basically, it causes extreme events that you couldn't predict. You can't really predict when a hijack is going to happen. But the probability, if you drive through a basin of attraction of a lot of where there's a lot of crime, then your risk of actually being hijacked is there. So I'm coming back to the bridge example. By actually bringing the environmental factors also into your models, and in the future with sensor-aware environmental structures, you could actually start mitigating risks that could have happened in the environment. We talk about perishable insights. It doesn't help with these insights to... It wouldn't have helped after the fact that the bridge collapsed to have said, but it would have collapsed. so it must be this. It's one of those insights you must understand. It's going to happen, and you must have enough data to be able to monitor it. And in this case, I'm just bringing it as an example of one of the cases that could be mitigated with smart sensors on bridges. So, actionable insights from the environment is right now there are risks in the environment. If this could be mapped and brought into your risk models, that will be very cool. And I touched on the importance of adaptive feedback. It doesn't help to actually have all these smart sensors doing their things, but you have to learn, ongoing learning. In vehicle telematics, what is the feedback? Where did the incident really happen? Where was the vehicle stolen? What was the sequence of events that led to a hijacking? So the next time you start seeing the sequence of events happening, you know, you can have an early warning that this is a hijack that is in process. So our cognitive mapping, the continuous monitoring of the environment and the behavior of the individuals, it's evolving all the time. And these insights are perishable. It doesn't help to actually go after the fact and analyze these models with beautiful statistics. It is too late. So you need to act with continuous monitoring and early warning to mitigate your risk. So therefore, the early warning of risk, and most importantly, the adaptive feedback. What was the true causes of the risk? Why? So that next time you encounter that, early indicators that you can mitigate the risk even before it happens. And this can be used for reward schemes, and the Internet of Things really also brings to you the way to talk to your client, being very customer-centric. That's all for me.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll open the floor for questions. And maybe just quickly on what Annette said now, about a year ago I was running on the beach in Mauritius and got a phone call and said, basically said, I think your car's being stolen. And I said, what? And I realized my husband was overseas and I said, I think you're right. And they said, well, based on the behavior of the car being driven very aggressively, something's probably happening. And I said, yes, go find the car. And then I realized my husband had actually taken the car for a service, and it was a service team who were taking it for a joyride. Ended up sleeping in Krugersdorp. Anyway, all hell was to pay. So there are benefits. Okay, any questions? I'm going to carry on talking until there are questions. I've got lots to say. Okay, there's a question at the back there.
Hi. Sorry. Have you experienced any unintended consequences from telematics, like people skipping robots to not stop or not have it as an emergency stop?
can I answer that question? Thank you, though. I'm trying to think about the question exactly is. So it's very difficult to see at a robot whether the robot's red or not from the telematics device in the car. So we do obviously see driver behavior. What we measure is acceleration, braking, cornering, speeding, cell phone use while you're driving. So we can determine and link those back to accidents. So I'm not quite answering the question. I think the answer is no to that question. I think maybe one of the biggest questions that gets asked is, you know, do you take that information to reject claims? And the company I work for, the answer is no, because in effect, I suppose you wouldn't have a product. But it's really about incentivizing the right behavior. And here's my training coming into the play. Apologies. And really, so it's how do you get the right behavior and how do you make sure people embrace the product? So we actually have written in our contract that we don't use the data other than time and place at time of accident. Thanks, Dave. Any questions for the panel? There's one over there. Correct. Have we got an hour? I can tell you. So the technology that we use is we obviously use in-app app on the cell phone that client downloads. We also have a unique sensor that gets placed on the windscreen because a lot of the technology out there, the complexities of it are you've got to try and reduce battery drain, and you also need to try and make sure that you are actually measuring the insured vehicle that's being driven. So we have ways of combating all of that. But you can contact me afterwards. I can show you and tell you. We've got 5 minutes. We've got 8 minutes. These lights are so bright.
Hi. Sure. When I read cognitive mapping, I got the idea we're going to hear something about your personality profile and your driving behavior. Philippa, do you maybe have comments on personality profiling and driver behavior, or even Sumari, if you've got some ideas on that? Has anybody found a link between that and driving behavior?
Sumari, do you want to go for it first, or do you want? Okay, there's a question over there if Mike can move there. So yes, we're also in the fortunate position that we can link that to one of the things we do on the vitality side is measure a stress test, so how stressed you are as a person. We've also sent various surveys out to our membership base asking them to give a little bit more information about their personality. So your A-type, very ambitious people, motivated, driven, orientated, tend to have a little bit worse experience than the more calmer people who listen to classical music and meditation in the car, which is as expected, but it's something that we're very much looking into and developing. And
I think one comment I can make, Eric, is these kind of products are definitely not for me. I fall into the category that Philippa pointed out of female drivers that drive really bad.
Yeah, she's not lying.
Thanks for a very interesting presentation. I just have a question to the panel. You touched on what's happening in international markets outside South Africa with respect to telematics. I think you mentioned a company called Progressive. Based on that graph you showed us in South Africa where there's a group that believes adoption rate will be 20%, there's a group that believes adoption rate will be 70%. What are the, in terms of overseas, like how can you just speak a bit more about overseas and what's happening in other markets with respect to how disruptive it's been? I mean, I think it was touched on, but I mean, how it seemed, yeah, if you can just expand a bit more on that and what exactly Progressive are doing and what they've done, that'd be very interesting. Thank you.
If you look at the states, I mean, it's a very big country. So there are quite a number of policyholders that are UBI products. But if you look at overall penetration, it's only about 1.5%. The biggest penetration that we're aware of at the moment is actually in Italy. And that was driven by a change in legislation with compulsory insurance, where also insurers are forced to give people a discount to install the telematics device. Now, Philippa might have more insight into this, but my take on where we are in the South African market is our penetration is more than what it is in the States at the moment, and that we class it to somewhere 4.5%, somewhere around there in our local market. I think one of the things that has slowed down the States quite a lot is one, the privacy concerns, and the other one is the fact that motor rates are quite heavily regulated. So in order for you to change your motor rates or introduce something new, you have to collect a certain amount of information over 100,000, I think, policy years in some of the states to get the regulator to sign off on those rates. So some of those things have made it quite a lot slower to take off in some of those countries. Okay, I don't know if you want to add something.
I think the issues obviously vary from country to country. Probably one of the key common themes as to why this hasn't sort of taken off sooner is probably the cost. And I think that's the biggest thing that's sort of changing at the moment is the cost of these devices and the use of smartphones has driven the cost a lot lower. And that's why we're sort of only now sort of tackling the question, whereas Progressive looked at this 20 years ago with their snapshot phone.
Yeah, maybe just to add from our side, it's less than 2% of our clients that choose not to actually have the telematics device. It's all optional. So the people that we attract really do want it and do want to see how they drive. And we also see that, you know, through the app technology, having that information after you take drive each trip, it really adds a lot of value, and people enjoy interacting with us in that manner. And I think also the younger generation, it plays a big role there because everything's about technology. So they like that interaction. That's a question.
Hi. My question is twofold. Firstly, is cognitive mapping already used with the telematics device? In other words, the various sequence of events that are typical of a hijacking event or a car being stolen, are those already taken into account in telematics? That's one part. The second part is, Annette mentioned that sort of information is perishable. So what sort of real-time feedback do you give back to a policyholder or a client that you are actually in danger right now? So, for example, current tracker systems, if you're driving in a high-risk area, they'll give you a call and say, oh, madam, you're driving in a high-risk area. Are you okay? Is everything all right? And you also have sort of like a hijacking button that you can actually press to send off an emergency signal to the tracking company. So I guess the question is there any real-time feedback that you can actually give to the client as an early warning system that something's actually taking place?
Yes, I can answer. We've got an industry partner for confidentiality reasons. I will not impart the name. But we have implemented in the past 18 months they basically have an RFID device in which we basically that communicates with the GPS devices, and which we developed the algorithm to basically track even the behavior of the BME devices. Sorry, I said it. So we have a partnership with Mixed Telematics. So and then basically what the whole thing is basically that we in stream, but basically by early warning, start seeing patterns and deviation in patterns. So my answer to yes, are we doing it? Most definitely for early warning. And the second question, sorry, could you just repeat again? So the early warning is then to basically feed back into the alarm system. So right now we basically give a message back to I can't actually import the exact details, but we give a information back that's informative about where the incident happened, what was the type of incident, and all that. So it is in stream, it's real time.
There's a question at the back there.
Good morning. In the last couple of years, there's been quite a bit of lobbying government to ask for compulsory third-party insurance again. Are there any views around whether there's a viability point at which these technologies could be used for compulsory third-party insurance?
The question was about using this kind of technology for compulsory third-party motor insurance, because the government at the moment is trying to implement, well, there's a lot of talk about trying to implement third-party compulsory insurance.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a possibility. I do not know quite how to answer this. Yeah.
I think from our side, Francia, I definitely think that it is one of the things, especially as technology that we're looking at here is getting cheaper and cheaper. I think if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I would have said no. It's just the cost is just too prohibitive. But as we're starting to look more at beacons, cell phone technology, those kind of things, I definitely think that it could play a role in that.
I mean, the case study on that is, of course, Italy, which is exactly what they've done.
We'll take one or two final questions from the floor. Oh, there, thank you.
Sorry. I just want to make the point that I think one shortcoming for me of this, or an unintended consequence, I don't think aggressive drivers are necessarily bad drivers. So I'm like Sumari, and I will never take up this product, but I haven't had a lot of accidents. You know, I've actually none. None, no big one.
You're one of my favorite people.
Oh, okay. Yes, I think, I mean, so you're losing out good risks probably, because I think more importantly still is past claims experience. And I think people who are maybe scared of driving, who are like driving maybe too slow or whatever. So that's my point.
Please answer this one. It's about aggressive drivers who don't have accidents. So the first thing is, do you look in the rearview mirror and see the carnage you leave behind you? Okay. Then the other thing that's quite important is, and we see this in our data, is, you know, if you look at high-performance vehicle ratings and the added loadings that high-performance vehicles get. So from our data, we've actually got to the stage now where we can reward those clients and they can earn more points because we can see that due to the nature of the car and to the ability of it, the fact that you accelerate at X G-force in that car versus X G-force in another car, it actually makes you a better driver driving that way in that car. So it depends on how quickly you learn to adapt. So again, phone me, I'll get you a policy.
All right.
But maybe you've just been lucky because I never used to have accidents, right? And I think, and I'm also quite an aggressive driver, but in the last 6 months, I've had about 7 or 8. Maybe I'm getting old.
It's the eyesight.
All right.
Follow-up question right next door and then we'll call it a day.
A question for all four of you, actually. It seems as though the main touch point of telematics with regard to communication with the clients is through a cell phone, okay? And that seems where it seems to be going that way overseas as well. Now, it feels a little bit counterintuitive while you're busy driving. There's a harsh acceleration. You get notified on your phone. You pick it up, and you're like, well, what? And then you get notified again. Have you guys thought about any possible ways of going around that? Or any kind of new technology innovation?
The whole new drive is with augmented reality, that your windscreen, you can still see through it nicely, but it's all these indicators are coming on your windscreen so that it doesn't actually take away your view, but actually your windscreen is really a computer screen, but it's giving you all warnings that is in the environment. So it's a bit futuristic, but
I think the critical part there is you can't do anything that's going to make an accident more likely. So you've got to be very careful in how you disseminate the data and how you interact with the clients. So that's obviously a big part of the telematics industry and on how to appropriately communicate with clients. Are there any closing remarks from the panel? Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your time and enjoy tea. Thanks a lot.